So continuing with the Minhagim of Pesach, I want to talk a little bit about Shabbos HaGadol, which is definitely considered a Minhag Yisrael. I mean, there's no particular practice Shabbos HaGadol, which is an obligation. The special Haftorah that we learn is as far as it goes. There's a Minhag Yisrael that the Rav gives a drasha on Shabbos HaGadol. That's an old Minhag. The Rav gets up and gives a special drasha. But Shabbos HaGadol itself, we label it with a very distinguished name, Shabbos HaGadol, but we have to know exactly what it means. So there's actually many explanations given. The primary one, I'm sure we've heard before, the primary explanation of Shabbos HaGadol is given by the Torah, and he says that Shabbos HaGadol was a day of a tremendous nes, that Hashem told the Jews to take for themselves the sheep or the goats for the Karban Pesach. And this was 5 days in advance, 4 days in advance from when they were going to shecht it. 4 days in advance when they were going to shecht it. And they took the sheep and they tied it to their bedposts to examine it for 4 days. And even though the sheep were the gods of the Egyptians, they said nothing. So usually if you were to take a sheep and tie it up and say, I'm going to kill this sheep, they would get quite upset with you. It was a nes that on Shabbos HaGadol, they didn't get upset. So why is it on Shabbos? So that year, it was really the 10th of Nisan. That year, the 10th of Nisan was Shabbos. So we observe Shabbos every year, Shabbos HaGadol, as a remembrance of that nes. So that's the primary explanation given for Shabbos HaGadol. But there's other things said about it as well. Some say that then we call it Shabbos HaGadol because the Haftorah itself on Shabbos HaGadol ends with the words, I'm sending you Eliyahu HaNavi. Before the day of Hashem comes, the day that is Gadol v'Nora, large, great, and awesome. So because Haftarah ends with the word HaGadol, it talks about the Yom HaGadol, the days of Mashiach. When Eliyahu HaNavi comes to announce for us Mashiach, so we call Shabbos HaGadol as a reference to Haftarah. That's another explanation given. There's a third explanation given. And this is given from a sefer called Roshei B'Samim. He says that we know on Shabbos HaGadol we are remembering the day that the Jews in Mitzrayim set aside their animal for the Karban Pesach. The term used in the Torah for setting aside the animal, it says Mishchu Kechula Chemson. It says pull back and take for yourselves sheep. So Chazal tell us that the word Mishchu, to pull back, was also a reference to the Jews to stop doing Avodah Zarah. Pull yourselves back from Avodah Zarah and take for yourselves sheep as a Karban. So the very first Jew to fight against Avodah Zarah was Avram Avinu. And Avram Avinu was referred to in a medrash as Adam HaGadol B'Anakim. He's the person who's great amongst giants. And Avram was considered a very gadol person, a great person based on his ability and his resolve to fight against Avodah Zarah. So being that it's the day where we fought against Avodah Zarah, we made this big move to set aside the Avodah Zarah and take the Avodah Zarah of the Mitzrim and say we're going to kill it and offer it as a Karban to Hashem. So therefore referred to Shabbos HaGadol as a reference to Avram fighting Avodah Zarah. So that's another one explanation given. There's a Sfas Emes, so now we're moving much later in history. The Sfas Emes says that until Yetzias Mitzrayim, so Shabbos had one purpose. It was Zecha Ma'aseh Bereishis. Shabbos was the day you remember Ma'aseh Bereishis. Remember creation. But after Yetzias Mitzrayim, we added on a new purpose to Shabbos. In Kiddush on Shabbos, we say Zecha Yetzias Mitzrayim as well. Obviously, we couldn't have mentioned that before Yetzias Mitzrayim occurred. So being that on this day, or this Shabbos, that we start remembering Nisei Mitzrayim, in addition to the Ma'aseh Bereishis, so Shabbos has actually become greater based on this event. So we call it Shabbos HaGadol to remind us that Yetzias Mitzrayim actually came and brought about more meaning to Shabbos for ourselves. So that's the Sfas Emes. So Shabbos HaGadol is the great Shabbos to remind us of the fact that Shabbos has become greater. One more explanation given is that this was a little more technical. We know that there was a famous machlokus between the Tzedukim and the Prushim. The Rabbanin, Chazal, and the Tzedukim, those who believed only in the written law, not the oral Torah. So the Tzedukim said that Shavuos will always be on a Sunday. Because they said you start counting Sfiras HaOmer, the Torah says, Mimacharas HaShabbos, day following Shabbos. So we understand that to mean the day after the first day of Pesach. And Chazal teach us that the word Shabbos in that context means day one of Pesach, means Yantif. The Tzedukim took it literally, and Tzedukim said that, no, you start counting the Omer the day after Shabbos. You're always counting the Omer starting on a Sunday. And then Shavuos is always going to be the 50th day. That's going to be also on a Sunday. So that was the big machlokas between the Siddukim and Chazal and the Prushim. The emes, the truth is, like obviously, that we start counting the day after the first day of Pesach. The second day of Pesach, we start counting. So it's called Shabbos HaGadol, and based on this, because because on this week, we're going to have two Shabboses. We're going to have regular Shabbos, and the day the Torah calls Shabbos for Sfiras Omer, which is the first day of Pesach. So being that we're going to have two Shabboses coming up, which have two different meanings, we say this is Shabbos HaGadol, this is regular Shabbos, and the one coming up in a few days, that's the other kind of Shabbos. So we try to stress that, because the Tzedukim, for a long time history, were a very big, there was a very big controversy with them. There's a big battle against the Tzedukim. And there's many practices that we had, based on Chazal, that we do things to show Tzedukim are wrong. Many examples of that. So the call the Shabbos HaGadol is stressing that this week there's a Shabbos HaGadol, and there's also another Shabbos. I mean, the first day of Pesach was referred to as Shabbos. I want to share with you one more thing about Shabbos HaGadol. This is an idea from Rav Moshe Feinstein. And this sort of builds off another idea we mentioned. We know that that Shabbos teaches us lessons about Maaseh Bereishis, Hashem created the world. We know that Pesach, Yetzias Mitzrayim, teaches us another lesson, Hashem runs the world. Shabbos alone tells you Hashem created the world, but doesn't give you any idea about Hashem running the world. Hashem taught us that He runs the world on Pesach. Yetzias Mitzrayim was where Hashem came into the world. He punished the wicked, rewarded the righteous, took us out of Mitzrayim, overturned nature. That's the lesson Hashem runs the world. So, but Rav Moshe says that the foundation of all of our beliefs, the foundation of everything that we stand for, is really the message of Shabbos. Meaning Hashem running the world is built on the foundation that Hashem created the world. So we say this is Shabbos HaGadol to tell us that Shabbos is the primary lesson for a Jew to first take in. It's upon Shabbos you build all of your other shkafas, all of your other perspectives on the world. And once you have that in place, you could take in the message of Pesach. But if you don't understand Shabbos, if you don't understand that Hashem created the world, then the message of Pesach is also irrelevant. So you call it Shabbos HaGadol because it's telling you that Shabbos is the lesson, which is the Gadol lesson. It's the greatest lesson a person can take in. And after that, all other lessons will sort of sit on top of the lesson of Shabbos. So that's Rav Moshe. So lots of reasons why it's called Shabbos HaGadol. In terms of practice, there's not much to do. Again, the Rav's Drasha is the Minhag Yisrael, which it's always good to go to the Rav's Drasha on Shabbos HaGadol. Additionally, there are those, it's not so common from what I've seen, but there are those who will have a minute to read the Haggadah on Shabbos HaGadol, the story of Magid. Some shuls, they'll stop and they'll read it in shul, or people read it on their own. So there's a minig like that. I've never seen it done myself, but there's a minig brought down about that. But besides that, the Shabbos to go is just a day to reflect upon these nisim and reflect upon the power of Shabbos. I want to talk next about Bedikas Chametz. So now we're moving more into the real days of Pesach. So Bedikas Chametz is a chiyuv midrabbanan. We said last week how the Torah forbids us from possessing chametz on Pesach. We mentioned last week there's two obligations the rabbis gave us to take care of that issue. One is bittul, and one is beer. Bittul is the verbal nullification of the chametz, and beer is search and destroy. And we mentioned last week why we need to do both. So bedikas chametz, in essence, is deraisa if we didn't do bittul. If bittul was done, then it's derabbanan, because again, either of them will work on a deraisa level. But the rabbis require us to go ahead and do beer, bedikas chametz and beer, which means search and destroy. We make the bracha at night on bedikas chametz, and the lashon of the bracha, the wording we used, is al beer chametz. So it's funny, we're standing there at night, and we're about to search for chametz, and the bracha made is about destroying the chametz, and we don't destroy till the next day. So many discuss, why is the bracha al bir chametz when what we're doing at that point is bedika and bir is much later? So the simple answer given is that the purpose of the bedika is for the bir. I mean, there's no mitzvah in just searching for chametz. The mitzvah is to search and destroy. So bedika is just there as sort of step one towards the destruction, because the goal is to destroy the chametz. So therefore, the bracha we make is on the actual essence of the mitzvah, which is the destruction of the chametz, which is the goal. There's an idea know, Baruch Hashem, most of us, by the time that comes, have cleaned our house, you know, upside down, backwards and forwards. There's not a speck of chametz left around. So we do bedikah, and usually there's nothing to find. I mean, once in a while you'll find something, and especially if there's little kids running around, you might find things. Maybe you realize you forgot to clean something, or you forgot to open out something. Things do happen, but often you don't find anything. So the Ramah says there's a minhag to put out pieces of chametz to search for during the bedikah. Now the Ramah says that's not an obligation, because the reason to do it, according to some, is that if you're going to make a bracha, al bir chametz, but there's no chametz to destroy, that's bracha vatala. So the Ramah says it's not true, because the mitzvah is to search and destroy if you find anything. If you search and don't find anything, you did your mitzvah also, because the mitzvah was just to do your best, to search and see what you find. So the Ramah says that you don't need to put anything out, technically, because even if you find nothing, there's a mitzvah to search. That is the mitzvah. If you didn't find anything, great. You know, that means that you did your job cleaning, and you did a great job, and yashar koach to you, and have a good Pesach. So he says there's no obligation to put out pieces of bread. However, there is a minhag to put out pieces of bread. One reason being because there are people who say the bracha would be levatola if you don't have anything to search for. Other reasons given for this are that if you don't put out the bread, don't put out the chametz, so then you may not search so well. If I know I cleaned my house for the past month, and I know everything is spick and span, not a single crumb anywhere. So then when I do my badika, I may do a lousy job, you know, because I cleaned everything anyways, what's the big deal, I don't really look around. If I know, well, there's actually chametz in my house right now, somebody took chametz and hid it all over the place, I better look really hard, I'll do better badika. So some say the minhag of putting out pieces of chametz is actually to help you do a better, more thorough badika, because you know there is something to find. So despite the fact that your house is so clean, now you know I better find the chametz somebody put out. It is recommended to put out hard chametz that won't crumble into little crumbs, because you don't want crumbs, obviously, getting your house right before Pesach. So you should put out, be wise, you know, be smart what you use, and don't put out things that are going to make a mess. Keep track of what you've done. You know, yes, all of us have those stories. Oh, I forgot where the 10th piece is, where did it go? So it's definitely very important. Some people actually might make a list. Make a list, yeah. just to be sure you don't forget. Yeah, you don't forget one. So, but having those pieces out does allow the people searching to do a more thorough bedika, which is another reason given to put out the pieces of chametz.
Can I just ask a quick question?
Yeah.
And when you say 10, what if you have 14 rooms? Can you do 14?
So the idea of 10 is a minhag al pi de Arizal. He says, al pi kabbalah, put out 10. So you don't need one in each room.
Okay.
The Ramah says just put out some chametz. But the reason we do 10 is based on it's a Kabbalistic concept, apparently. It's from the Arizal to put out 10. So even if you have 14 rooms, just put 10 out. You don't have to have in each room. That's for sure. You can put anywhere you want. What's the idea of 10? So one explanation is al pi kabbalah, you put out 10, and we don't know why. It's an Arizal, it's Kabbalistic, and that's it. I did see one reference that some say the 10 pieces of bread put out are actually a zecher to the 10 sons of Haman, which is interesting, because the 13th of Nisan was actually the day that Haman made his gezerah. If you look in the Megillah, you just read it 2 weeks ago, Haman made his gezerah against the Jews on the 13th of Nisan. And that's why Esther and Mordechai, they fasted for 3 days, and those 3 days of fasting were actually during Pesach, and they skipped the Seder that year. They didn't do Matzah and Maror because they were fasting. So being that the gezerah of Haman occurred on the 13th of Nisan, which is the day of Bedikas Chametz, we put out 10 pieces to remind us of the 10 sons of Haman. There's an explanation like that. You can argue that Haman is like Chametz, you know, the evil of Haman is like Chametz, and the like. When you find and destroy those 10 pieces, you're actually destroying Haman's sons. So you can think about it in that way as well. But that's the concept of putting out. So there's no obligation to put anything out at all. The minhag is to put out some Chametz, and the Arizal also is put out 10. So I think most people do put out 10 because that's what we're familiar with doing. If you're concerned you're going to put out 10 and you're not going to find them, you have little kids running around that might spread the chametz over the house, whatever, so you don't have to put out anything. You know, if that's the case, definitely the Ramah says there's no obligation to put out the bread. So if there's something that makes you nervous putting out the bread, you don't have to. But it's a minhag yisrael to put out some bread or crack, whatever, put out some chametz around the house to find. Sometimes like a dry noodle might be very safe to use, an uncooked noodle, something like that, that won't crumble, won't make crumbs, things like
that.
What?
Will that burn?
It won't burn so well, that's true. It won't burn so well. But anything burns well. If you leave it in long enough, everything will burn. But that's actually a good point. So bread burns better.
Mm-hmm.
But these things create a thorough search and allow you to carry out your mission in searching and destroying. one other point made is that let's say that you do Bedikas Chametz and find nothing. So that means that tomorrow you're not going to burn anything. We want you to burn your Chametz because, not because you have to burn Chametz, but because there's a mitzvah to do Bittul Chametz. And Bittul Chametz is always what we usually do when we're burning our Chametz. And there's an obligation to do Bittul Chametz. So some say that you want to have something to burn so you don't forget to do Bittul, because if the time comes for where it's Asur to eat Chametz, you need to do Bittul, it's too late for Bittul. So some say the reason to actually put out the bread and find it and burn it the next day is so you actually have some sort of timeline or deadline, so you burn Chametz, do your Bittul, you don't forget your mitzvahs. So that's another good reason to put out the bread. At Bedikas Chametz, the best thing to use, the Gemara says, is a nair, a candle. The reason for that is because a candle is able to see into the nooks and crannies and the cracks in your house. I mean, the Gemara is talking about a candle versus using, let's say, like a torch. I'll talk about that in a second. But a torch is something which doesn't work that well in doing a search because you're worried you're going to burn something down. You know, you can't get into the small areas. So the Gemara says a candle is better than a torch. And it actually recommends, the halacha recommends a wax candle because oil candles will drip, they'll make a mess, they're hard to handle. And your goal is to do a thorough search. So the concept was to use a wax candle. Nowadays, most of us probably use flashlights, which poskim say are fine to use. They do the same job or better job than candles do. Some have the minhag to carry the candle anyways as well, just because that's the minhag as well, to have a candle. So I usually do that. I usually have a candle and my flashlight, you know, just to keep it the minhag. But that's the ideal way to do it is with a wax candle, as opposed to, let's say, Shabbos candles. There's advantages of using oil or Hanukkah candles when it comes to because Chametz wax is the best way to go. We all know about the feathers. We always see the packets in the mail with the little feather inside. The idea of the feather...
doesn't do a good job.
No, it doesn't. Basically, the feather is your ancient broom. That's all it was. You know, the idea of the feather is that you want a little broom to sweep up the crumbs. So they use feathers. If you have a little dust, you know, duster or something, that's just as good. There's no mitzvah or minhug per se in a feather, from what I can tell. It's just that was the convenient way, you know, 500 years ago to sweep up little crumbs using a feather. So... if you have a better tool nowadays, I would assume you could use it. The wooden spoon also is a minhag brought down to use a wooden... that's actually a minhag to use a wooden spoon. One concept is that the Ramah says, if someone finds no chametz during the bedika, you should still burn the kli used for the bedika. And the reason for that is, like we said before, so you don't forget to do your bittul. We want to have something to burn. So if you did your bedika, didn't have a wooden spoon, just had your flashlight and your feather, and found no chametz, so then there's nothing to do the next day. So you'd forget to do your bittul. If you have your wooden spoon, and you burn it, so even if you have no chametz to burn, at least you have that to burn, and you'll remember to do your bittul. That's actually something quoted as part of the minhag. And the minhag is, even if you do find chametz, to burn the spoon along with the chametz. Why a spoon? So I did see an explanation that we mentioned before, how there's a connection between Haman, chametz, Amalek, etc. And it says that when Moshe Rabbeinu was on the mountain, when the Jews first fought Amalek in their very first battle in Parshas Beshalach, so it says that when Moshe's hands were in the air, they would be victorious. When his hands were down, they would lose. So a spoon's a kaf. It's the same term we use for the palm of the hand. And using a spoon is a reference to Moshe's hands being up in the air and we'd win. The second battle against Amalek that we have is on Purim. And on Purim, Amalek was killed using the eights, the gallows. It was called a tree. It's called an eights in the Megillah. So Moshe beat Amalek with his hands, his kaf. Mordechai and Esther beat Amalek with the eights, with the gallows, the tree. So we use a wooden kaf, you know, kaf shel eights, as a reference to destruction of Amalek. And then you burn it in your fire, and you're, along with the chametz, you're destroying Amalek too. That's kind of the reference over there. That was quoted in the Sefer Minhag Yisrael Torah when he brought down that concept. Along with burning your chametz, there's a minhag to burn other mitzvah items as well. Many of us save our lulav or our ravos to burn with the chametz. Often if I have, let's say, like old Havdalah candles or Hanukkah wicks or old besamim, I'll throw them in there. So the reason for that is there's a concept, ho'ovas aved be'mitzvah, aved be'mitzvah achrisi, something you already did a mitzvah with. You do another mitzvah with it. So you could take your lulav and just, you know, wrap it up and put it out for the yard trim truck or something, for the garbage if you wrap it up properly. But, you know, if you could use it to burn your chametz, use it as firewood to burn your chametz, you're doing another mitzvah with your lulav or with the other mitzvah items. So there is a minhag to save your lulav or your aravos or other mitzvah items throughout the year and to burn with your chametz. Now just to put a little caveat on that. I know that some people have a minhag to save their challah and burn it with the chametz. I'm not sure if any of you do that. There's a minhag like that. Many poskim discourage that, because with challah there's an idea not to leave it around because you might come to eat it. You're not allowed to eat your challah. So there are people who will take the challah, every single little bowl of challah, throw it in their freezer throughout the year, and then wait for Pesach and burn it. But that wouldn't be advisable just because you don't want to leave challah around and accidentally think it's like a roll or something and eat it, which is asur to do. So things which you might use, you shouldn't leave around. Some even say Hanukkah wicks is better to burn because people use wicks throughout the year and they might take a Hanukkah wick and use it for something which is not a mitzvah. But your old lulav you have another use for, basically. So that you can leave around. We're not concerned for that. But it's good to. But the idea of using one mitzvah item for another mitzvah, that's a concept we find very often in halacha. The Erev of Pesach, there's another minhag of Tainas Bechoros, the firstborns fast. Or at least most of nowadays they kind of get out of their fast. But let's make the firstborns fast. So where does this come from? So the simple explanation given, according to most, is that because the firstborns in Mitzrayim, the Jewish firstborns, did not die, so they have a day where they recognize the fact they were saved and they fast. That's the simple explanation given. That's the most common explanation given. There's another explanation given which is more of a chiddush, very interesting, I'll tell you in a minute. But the minhag is so that they're supposed to fast Erev Pesach. The halacha says that if the firstborn child is a katan, the father should fast on his behalf. If the father is also a firstborn, it says the mother should fast on his behalf. The minhag is not to do that. I've never seen a woman take that on. But that's the concept actually quoted in halacha, which again, it's not the minhag, so I'm not telling anybody, any woman to fast, but if the father is a firstborn himself and can't fast on half of his katan, so then the mother should, according to some opinions. That's until the kid's bar mitzvah. Once the kid's bar mitzvah, then it's up to the kid to fast for himself, and the father's off the hook if he's not a firstborn. So I have a firstborn son, and until last year I was doing this, and then he became bar mitzvah, so now it's his problem. So I'm not a firstborn. But that's the idea of the Tainas Bechoros. Now there is this kula we rely upon. If you eat at a Sudas mitzvah, you're allowed to then break your fast and eat the rest of the day. The primary minhag out there is to attend a siyum on Erev Pesach in the morning, and when you attend a siyum, you can eat from the Sudas mitzvah, and at that point you don't have to fast anymore. That's a very big kula. We don't rely upon that for other fasts. Other fasts do have a heter to eat based on a Sudas mitzvah. But usually not a siyum, and typically only if you're like really part of the suda, you can't just invite the entire shul to come. We're very mikul this fast. We're very mikul with it, really for a number of reasons. Number one is that it's just itself a minhag. It's not actually brought as an obligation of the Gemara anywhere. Number two is that if a person did fast the entire Erev Pesach, imagine what the Seder would look like. How can a person handle a Seder? Waiting till midnight to eat their first taste of matzah when they've been fasting all day. It'd be very difficult. So therefore, we search for kulas to allow them to eat because or else it'd be very hard to do your mitzvahs of Pesach and have a proper Seder at night because of the weakness you'd have from fasting. So that's why we do have this concept and sort of this imperative in some ways that they should attend the siyum or Sudas mitzvah and therefore they'd be able to move on from there and eat the rest of the day and have a normal Pesach, a normal Seder. But if there's a firstborn and there was no siyum and no Sudas mitzvah, he would be obligated to fast the entire day until Kiddush. So it happens occasionally, and it's challenging for those who have to do it. But
Do they have matzah? I forgot. What do they eat? Where they siyum? Do they wash on matzah? You
can't have matzah or Pesach.
Right. So what
do
they?
Some shuls put out like macaroons and stuff. Oh, I've seen that. I mean, if the shul is very brave, they'll let you have like bagels in the morning or something.
Outside, or
in a very confined space. I remember in Atlanta in the shul they have bagels on Erev Pesach morning. You could eat until the fourth hour. You're out to the chametz still. Yeah. So usually it's like 10:30 or something. Yeah, but a lot of shuls are too scared to have bagels around the shul Erev Pesach, and I usually see around here just boxes of macaroons and stuff. That's usually what's there. As delicious as that sounds. So I want to share with you from Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, he gives actually a very novel explanation of Tainas Bechoros, very different than we're used to. Again, the typical explanation, as we said, is that the Bechoros didn't die in Makas Bechoros, and therefore they should fast to remember that nes. Rav Shlomo Zalman has a very famous idea. He has a number of questions. Rav Shlomo Zalman says, number one, really, the nes of Makas Bechoros happen not on Erev Pesach, but on Pesach itself. So if you want to mark that Nes, it should be on the 15th of Nisan, not the 14th, on the first day of Pesach. And if you want to say we can't fast then, because it's Yantif, so usually if you have a fast that's on a Yantif, you don't knock it back to Erev Yantif, you knock it back 2 days before. Like when a fast falls on Shabbos, like Tanis Esther, for instance, we would fast on Thursday. So if anything, why are you fasting Erev Pesach, which itself is a Yantif, if the Iker miracle happened on the 15th of Nisan, and the 14th Yantif, you should knock it back to the 13th. Because Erev Pesach itself is considered a joyous day. It's the day the carbon was brought. It's considered Yantif on its own right. So he says, if that's the concept, then I don't understand why we're fasting on the 14th. They should fast on the 13th. Number two, he says, why are they fasting? If a miracle happens to you, do you fast or do you celebrate? The Bechoros, he says, should make a Yantif out of it. They should have a special Suda to celebrate the fact that they were saved from the Makkah. They shouldn't fast. You know, if we're saved from death to life, we celebrate. We have a Suda Sada. So this is the explanation. He doesn't understand why they're fasting. Number three, we know that Chazal teach us, Makkas Bechoros didn't just hit the male firstborns, hit the female firstborns, hit the oldest children in the house, it hit a lot of different types of people in Mitzrayim. So why are only the male firstborns fasting when Makkas Bechoros actually struck down many more than just the male firstborns in Mitzrayim? It says that it was the males, it was the females, it was the, if there's no firstborns in the house, the oldest one in the house would die. So everyone, we should have a lot more people fasting for this then. And then he says, and additionally, the nace happened to the firstborns of that generation. But how does that impact our modern day firstborns? So you could maybe we should say it a little differently. Anybody who descends from a firstborn in Mitzrayim should be fasting despite if they're a firstborn or a secondborn or a thirdborn. Just because you're a firstborn nowadays in 2019, that doesn't mean you weren't saved. Your great-great-grandparent may have been a fifthborn. Who knows? A tenthborn. We have no idea. So really the ones fasting should be the descendants of the firstborns of Mitzrayim and not the modern-day firstborns. Another question. See, there's a lot of questions as to why this explanation doesn't really make sense. So Shlomo Zalman has a very different explanation of this fast. He says that the reason they fast is the following. We know originally the firstborns were meant to be the Kohanim. They're the ones who are supposed to do the Avodah Beis HaMikdash. The firstborns lost that privilege because of the Cheda Egel. At the Cheda Egel, Shevet Levi did not sin. The women did not sin. But the firstborns of other Shvatim did sin. So therefore, the firstborns at that point lost their privilege of serving the Beis HaMikdash. And it was given to Shevet Levi. The Kohanim and Leviim took on that privilege. So the Bechoros, when the Kohanim would be there serving this Mikdash, it was always a reminder to the Bechoros that they sinned at the Cheda Egel, and that they lost their special stature as being the Shevet, the people to serve this Mikdash. So the rest of the year, you know, they were sad about it. You know, they felt sort of a loss, a lack of that privilege. They felt down about their chet. But Erev Pesach comes along, and it's even worse. Erev Pesach was the busiest day of the year in the Beis Mikdash. Every single Jew, man, woman, and child had to come, bring the Karban Pesach, and you know the Gemara describes how busy it was. Every kohen was on duty. They're up to their knees in blood from all the karbanos. It was quite a busy day. So of all the days of the year, this was the day that the Bechoros were most depressed about, because it was the most potent reminder of the fact that they sinned at the Cheda Egel. Because this is the day where it's the most glorious day in the Beis HaMikdash, where every single Jew was there, and every single Kohen was on duty doing his work, and the Bechoros were sitting on the sidelines, not being able to do the Avodah because of their sins. So they're very, very sad. So therefore, on Erev Pesach, that was a day that they would fast, because they're remembering their sins of the Cheda Egel, and they're fasting as part of their sadness and despair, and I guess as a sign of tshuva, because they felt so lowly they couldn't do the avoda. So it's a very different explanation. So that only applied to the male firstborns, because the females wouldn't have served anyways. And that applies to every firstborn, every generation, because they would have been there. A firstborn born in 2019 would be like a kohen, had they maintained that stature. But because they lost at the Cheda Egel, then every firstborn throughout history no longer can serve the Beis HaMikdash. So now we understand why it's on Erev Pesach. We understand why they're fasting and not celebrating. And we also understand the concept, you know, why is it that we're so makel that they can eat at a siyum? So usually if it's a fast day, a siyum is not going to get you off the hook. So Shlomo Zalman says that people, that the bechoros are allowed to eat if they go to a siyum, because the joy of learning Torah and seeing they have the opportunity to connect to Hashem through the Torah, that helps to give them happiness. It helps them to overcome their sadness. Like it says in Pirkei Avos, Gadol Torah Yosra Mina Kahuna. The Torah is greater than Kahuna. So if they can go to a Siyum, experience the accomplishment of Limud Torah, they feel better because we're not Kohanim, but we have Limud Torah. So then they can get over their sadness and they can eat. So this is Rosh Shlomo Zalman's explanation of Tanis Bechoros. Very different than we're used to. But either way, the minhag is that the Bechoros need to fast, and unless they go to a Siddur Mitzvah, and the minhag is they should go to a Siddur Mitzvah to avoid fasting so they can actually experience Pesach in a productive and energetic way to do all their mitzvahs, not have to wait around until midnight to have their first bite of food. Okay, good. So now I want to move more maybe into the Seder itself. So we'll do a little bit of it. I guess next week we can do more. If not, then we'll do what we can do now. But the Seder is, we call it a Seder. And people actually ask, why is it called a Seder in the first place? The word Seder means order. It's actually Rashi himself, I think, is the earliest source for calling it a Seder. Rashi says that they would call it a Seder in his time. The simple meaning of it being a Seder is that we have a lot of mitzvahs to do that night. Pesach night is loaded with mitzvahs. We have to have 4 cups of wine, we have to eat maror, we have to eat matzah, we have to tell the story, we have so many things to do. So these things have to be done, now I'll be Seder. We have to do them in the proper order. And the halacha actually is, if you do things out of order, some things you're not yotzei. The 4 cups of wine have to be done along with certain mitzvahs. The first cup goes with Kiddush. The second cup with Magid. Third cup Birchas HaMazon. Fourth cup with Hallel. If you just drink 4 cups of wine straight, you're not yotzei your mitzvah. It has to go along with the Seder. So the Seder is a very important point halachically that things have to go in order. So we call it the Seder because we're actually trying to hit on this special order. So that's one explanation given. And that's the most basic explanation as to why it's called a Seder. The other explanation, a little bit deeper, is that the concept of Pesach is to show that the world itself is not random. Hashem runs the world. The world is organized. The world has a plan. The world has Seder. So when you're sitting there at your Seder, and everything is, you know, Kadesh, Orchatz, Karpas, everything's planned, everything's deliberate, everything is there, you know, with a certain goal and a certain purpose. So it teaches us the lesson of Yetzias Mitzrayim, which is that the world has a purpose. And the world has a Seder. The world's organized. The world the Hashem does things deliberately. And Hashem runs what happens. Things don't just occur. Things aren't random. Things are mesuder. Things are organized. Things are done in the proper way. So the order is very important, both in the mitzvot and also in the concept of what the Seder is about. There's a minug, amongst Ashkenazim at least, that one running the Seder wears a kittel. The idea of wearing a kittel is brought down in a few different ways. Number one is that it's to remind us of Yom Misa. Now, the kittel is looked at like a burial shroud. And the day where we're sitting there and we're enjoying ourselves, our chirus, our freedom, our nobility, the great simcha, we never want to get carried away with it. So always want to have that reminder that even though you're very happy and you're free, don't become too frivolous, don't lose yourself in the joy, maintain control and recognize that after 120 years, you know, you have to be able to answer up for your actions. So for us, that sounds a little bit extreme to have it. You just have to think about that, your Seder. But to me, what it tells you is that obviously we're not experiencing the Seder like we should. It could be if we experience the Seder properly, we'd be so taken by our cheres and by our simcha, we would lose ourselves if not for that reminder. So I would think it's not that this reminder is too morbid for us. It's the other way around. Our Seder is not exciting enough. If our Seder has helped, we're emotional enough to the point that we felt the true freedom and ability of Yetzias Mitzrayim, we would lose ourselves in the simcha and we need reminders to come back and control ourselves. So I think it speaks more to the fact that we're not hitting into the real emotion of the Seder. Another reason given for the kittel is that the kittel is really the opposite. The kittel is looked at as a beged of malchus. It's a royal beged. It's a beged of a free person. You know, it's white, it's clean, it's like a royal robe. And there's an idea to look at a kittel as your beged of chirus. It's very opposite. Now, one idea is that it's a beged of misa, and one is that it's a beged of life, and of malchus, and of chirus. Al derech Chassidus, the Chassidus Svarim, they point out that Pesach is actually compared to Yom Kippur. We know the other time we wear a kittel is Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur is a day of atonement where we wear white to show that we're pure and we're clean, like angels. And Pesach is a new birth of Klal Yisrael, so it's like a renewal. It's a day of kapara. It's a day where we can get atonement as well. Because when you're newly born, you know, it's say like a, you know, talking about the Christians have their term, but you know, you're reborn, whatever it is. But when you're newly born, when you're recreated by Hashem, because you're a new nation on Pesach, it's an opportunity there also for atonement, like Yom Kippur. So we can look at the kittel on Pesach as a reminder for us that Pesach is actually a day where we have a renewal, and then we can be atoned for and forgiven by Hashem, like in Yom Kippur. The Seder plate, there's many minhagim that set it up. I'm not gonna get into all those minhagim. The two, I think, primary ways to set the Seder plate, one is quoted from the Arizal, and one's from the Ramah. Most Haggadahs have a picture of it. I probably have it here. Most Haggadahs have that picture to show you. Everyone has their minhag in their family what to do. I just want to explain why each is as they are, at least to some degree. So this Haggadah has actually two different formations. It's small writing. But we have the Arizal. He has here the Gra as well. And there's the Ramah. The most common, I think, is the Arizal's formation. And the Arizal's formation is where you have the Zroa, the Beitza, the Maror, Charosis, Karpas, Chazeres. It's like two triangles, you know, probably in there, even a good picture or something. Mm-hmm. But the idea of these two different formations, so the Arizal is Al Pi Kabbalah. I mean, the Arizal is always doing things Al Pi Kabbalah, so Kabbalistically there's some reason for that formation. But there is an explanation given, at least to the order. This is from the Sefer HaTodah. He says that if you use the Arizal's Seder plate, so your top three items are your Zroa, Beitza, and Maror. So those are three primary mitzvahs of the day. Meaning that Zroa and Beitza, I'll talk about more later, Mitzvah Hashem, but Zroa and Beitza are meant to remind us of the Karban Pesach and Karban Chagiga. In the times of the Beis HaMikdash, those are two major mitzvahs we had to do at the Seder, and those were on the Seder plate. So we, instead of having those two Karbanos, we put out the bone, we put out the egg, and those are minus those karbanos. Those two are primary mitzvahs of the day, which we can do, but they're primary. So is the maror. Maror is next in the order, and the maror is also a primary mitzvah. The bottom part, the charosis, karpas, and chazeres, are kind of secondary. I mean, charosis is meant to be just a dip for your maror. Karpas is not a mitzvah deraisa, it's just something we do to help, so the kids ask questions. And chazeres is just the additional maror to use at korich, so it's just an additional no eating of maror. So your top three are your primary mitzvahs, your bottom three are your sort of secondary or no less primary mitzvahs. But that's one, I guess, more simple explanation of the Arizal setup. It's more Al Pi Kabbalah the way we do it, but at least there is an order that we can understand. The other way to do the Seder plates, like the Ramah. The Ramah says what you do, I don't have the picture here, but he says basically you want to do in the order of the mitzvahs, in chronological order of the night's mitzvahs. Because the Ramah is saying that there's a principle in Mavirin al mitzvahs. You don't pass over a mitzvah. So if the first thing you're doing is karpas, that should be the first thing in front of you. The next thing you're doing is next will be matzah. That should be next. You know, maror. You should have everything in order of what you're doing because you don't want to have to reach over a mitzvah to the other one. So the Seder plate of the Ramah is there to so you don't miss any mitzvot, that it goes in order of the night. The Seder plate of the Arizal is more Al Pi Kabbalah and try to keep the mitzvot, you know, in their chashivis or in their special place where they should be in terms of, you know, of their importance. The whole concept of having the Ka'ara, having the Seder plate, is an interesting concept. We know that the Seder is not meant to be just a discussion. The Seder is meant to be a full body experience. It's supposed to involve all your senses, you know, taste, and sight, and sound, and feel. It's meant to be an experience for us. I like to say the Seder is not just, it's an experience. You're trying to experience the night, which is what Chazal tell us. You have to see yourself as if you left Mitzrayim. So you want to really get involved in it intimately, and with all five senses. So part of the idea of having the Ka'ara, I believe, is based on the concept of matzah. Matzah is called Lechem Oni. So Lechem Oni means poor man's bread. The Chazal say it also means lechem she'onim lo dvarm harbe. It's the bread upon which you recite many things. And we know during the Seder you uncover the matzah, and the Maggid is recited over uncovered matzah. And part of the idea, just very simply, is that matzah is meant to be for us, it's a conversation piece. We don't just talk about matzah, we look at the matzah. We touch the matzah. We eat the matzah. We hear the crunch. You know, we get ourselves into it. And we want to have that conversation piece because it makes the whole experience more real. We're actually seeing, this is what they ate in Mitzrayim. This is the exact bread that they ate. We're eating it too. And we're going to look at it, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to touch it, and we're going to feel it. It's going to be part of the experience. So the fact that you have the ka'ara, you actually have the Seder plate out there, it's also, all the pieces on the Seder plate for us are part of the experience. Now, we don't just discuss maror, we don't just eat maror, we actually look at the maror, we hold up the maror. It's supposed to be for us, these are the pieces to connect us emotionally to the story. So it's something very unique to Pesach. You know, other Yom Tovim, other mitzvahs that we do, we don't have all these visuals. You know, we don't have these conversation pieces. But Pesach has that. It's actually very interesting. The Tkiyah Shofar, for instance, if you ever notice, the minug is that you don't leave the shofar out. As soon as he's done blowing, they cover it up. I don't know if you ever noticed that in shul, but as soon as the Baal Tokiah is done blowing, the minug is to immediately cover it up, take it out to blow, and it's covered up again. Keep it covered up. So there's a reason for that. You know, Pikaboa, they do that. But many mitzvahs, you're not trying to display the mitzvah. You do it, and you put it away. At the Seder, everything sits out the whole time. You know, they're there, you're looking at them, you're talking about them, you're moving them around, you're holding them up, you're waving them this way and that way. You know, if you're Sephardi, you walk around with matzah on your back. It's all there because it's meant to be a full-body experience. So the ka'ara, for us, is part of that full-body experience, and you really do get the sight and the taste and the sound and everything. You get to really experience all the different signs of Mitzrayim. The idea of having the Zroa and the Beitza. So it's interesting, you talk about what's the halacha, what do we do? The Gemara says you're supposed to have two tavshilin, two cooked foods on the Seder plate. Doesn't matter what they are. The Gemara gives examples, you can put out a beet, it says rice even. I guess the Gemara was Sephardi, I guess, I don't know, but before we had the minhag of eating kidneys. But the Gemara gives examples of things you can put in your Seder plate, and the things that we don't do ourselves. But the halacha is just two cooked foods. The idea of the cooked foods is to remember there used to be two karbanos. There's the Karban Pesach and Karban Chagiga. We used to be able to do two Karbanos at the Seder, and unfortunately nowadays there's no Beis HaMikdash, so we have to just remember them through these two foods on the Seder plate. They're placeholders. Meretz Hashem, one day soon, we'll actually put the Karban over there. And instead of having a little bone, we'll put a whole lamb on the table. And the roasted lamb will be over there. the halacha is just to have two foods. The minhag Yisrael has become that we use a zroa and a beitza. You put out a bone, and you put out an egg. So why is that? Why use the bone and the egg? So the minhag is explained that the zroa, which is the bone, that represents the zroa natuya. We know that Hashem saved us Mitzrayim with the Yad Chazaka of a zroa natuya. So the bone's meant to represent the Karban Pesach, but once we're at it, we'll make it symbolic. So we take the zroa. They call it, I don't know, the shank bone, an arm bone, some sort of bone. Some use like a wing or like some sort of, I don't know what bones everyone uses, but it's supposed to be some sort of arm bone to show the Zroa Natuya. That's what it's supposed to be.
We use a chicken neck.
Chicken neck, okay.
Is that really an arm bone?
I don't know. Because the Zroa means the arm, so I don't know.
Right.
I mean, it's either way, it's fine, but whatever you use. But
what's an arm on a chicken?
What? I guess the wing, I guess. I don't know, but...
They get that out, don't they?
I usually buy whatever they sell Shalom's as the bone.
Yeah.
Shalom's always has this big box of bones. That's that one. But,
so is the shank bone, is that an arm?
I don't know what the shank bone is. I'm not sure.
What are they selling there then?
I don't know. I guess shank bones.
Sometimes looks like a drumstick, like from a drumstick bone.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know.
So that's a foot.
A foot, yeah. I guess it's close enough to an arm. I don't know. But so that's supposed to represent the Zroa Natuya. The egg, the beitza. So in Aramaic, a beitza is called a beya, and the word beya relates to the word ba'i, which is desire. And they explain that the egg represents ba'i rachmana lemifrak yasana, the Hashem desire to save us. So the beitza represents Hashem coming in to save Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim, because the word in Aramaic is beya, and beya is the idea of desire. The other explanation given about the egg is one that it's always funny to hear. Now, we know an egg is a food for avelus. The minhag is we feed avelim eggs. The idea of it being round is a sign of avelus. It says that a mourner has no mouth. A mourner has nothing to say. They remain silent. The egg has no opening, has no end. It represents a circle of life. A life has its, you know, it has its cycles. So an egg, we know, is a mourner's food. The there's a famous concept that Tisha B'Av is always the same night as Pesach. Your first Seder and Tisha B'Av are always the same night of the week. So this year, the first Seder is on Shabbos, and Tisha will be on Shabbos again this year. We'll push up to Sunday, but it's actually be on Shabbos. So there's always a connection between the first night of Pesach and Tisha B'Av. It's actually quoted in a Medrash. The Medrash quotes a pasuk in Eicha. It says, Hispiani Bamrorim, Hirvani La'ana. Because Hashem has satiated me with maror, and He has saturated me with La'ana, with wormwood, which is some sort of bitter wood that represents, you know, bitterness and, you know, difficult times. So the Medrash says that is the connection between Pesach and Tisha B'Av. And it's quoted from this pasuk, Hisbiani b'mrorim, hirvani lana. So I always think it's interesting, like, we're sitting there at the Seder, it's a very joyous night, we're celebrating our freedom, we're celebrating redemption, we're celebrating our nobility, and we have to sit there staring at an egg, reminding us of the Churban. Like, so on the one hand, the Churban is relevant to Pesach because we can't bring a Karban Pesach, which is a primary part of the day. But on the other hand, it's not just the Churban. We're talking about Tisha B'Av, about tragedy. Now, why is that such an important reminder to have sitting at the Seder? It seems to be the polar opposite of what the Seder is supposed to represent. It's a very funny thing. But I think the explanation is very simple, and it's a very important message for us. Pesach represents the Klai Yisrael chosen as Hashem's people. So we're given the privilege, we're given the power of being Am Hashem. We know that power comes with responsibility, and responsibility comes with accountability. Tisha represents that you're accountable for your actions. On Pesach, Hashem says, I'm giving you the greatest power in the world. Everything in this world is going to be based on the actions of Klal Yisrael. You're getting a Torah, you're becoming my people, and you are you're the most privileged of all people. You have the most responsibilities, but responsibility means that you're also accountable for your actions. The mashal I like to give is that, let's take a very large company. So if you want to compare a mistake made by the night janitor versus a mistake made by the CEO, it's totally different. If the night janitor makes a mistake and forgets to clean a toilet, okay, so someone the next day will be upset that the toilet's not cleaned, but the company is doing just fine. If the CEO makes a mistake, he can lose millions of dollars, people can lose their jobs, the company can go under because of his mistake. The CEO is given much more power, much more responsibility, but also much more accountability. The janitor is given much less power, less responsibility, and less accountability, because his mistakes don't matter quite as much as the CEO's mistakes. So that's on Pesach, we're made into the CEO. And therefore Hashem says, you have to recognize that on Pesach, your actions might lead to something like Tisha B'Av, Chas V'Shalom. If you're not careful with how you act, you don't take your role in this world seriously, it could lead to destructive results. So it's part of the power of Pesach is to recognize that our actions are meaningful. We are Hashem's nation. We are powerful. We have responsibilities. And we have a role in this world. We have goals. We have a tachlis. We have a purpose. And therefore, things like Tisha B'Av could occur if we're not careful with how we use that power. So I think that's a very important message about Golus, about the Seder, about Geula, because it means that we are, because of our power, because of our greatness, because we are Hashem's freed people, because of that, we're accountable for the actions. And that's the remez you have in the Beitza. We'll stop there. So if we meet next week, we'll do the rest of the Seder.